Noor Haider here, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we go beyond the headlines, taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Listen to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS News.
Really having a mission to solve the antimicrobial resistance crisis. And we do that by breaking resistance and virtually got universal resistance breakers that tame bacteria. So they go from a resistant state to a sensitive state, and suddenly the oldest antibiotics or biocides or surfactants or whatever detergents you want to use can work again as they used to. So if the bacteria are not resistant to treatment, they can grow in our drug and it doesn't affect them. It's only resistance that we take away. And that's kind of what's the game changer really, is that you don't get the, like, I don't know how detailed it can go, but if you break the membrane of a bacterium, you create an evolutionary pressure, which will cause more resistance. So by not doing those kind of things, you have a different approach and you can kind of, bring the antibiotics back again.
And I suppose it's quite important because we're hearing about whether it's antibiotics being overused, that we have to sort of develop new ones that I imagine can be quite expensive and potentially hard to distribute to certain places. So does removing this resistance, I guess, can that also be quite a cost-effective way to allow for us to treat bacteria with antibiotics we already have?
Yes, that's exactly right. So that you can, it doesn't actually matter anymore what access to antibiotics the clinician has. So it still is important that the antibiotic matches whether it's a gram-positive or gram-negative bacterium, but the resistance to the antibiotic you can take away. So a broad-spectrum antibiotic should, in principle, work again.
And I imagine that and I know for me, just hearing in the media, I've heard of, a rise of whether it's like sort of gonorrhea that has antibiotic resistance or people who have sort of long-term UTIs or other health issues that don't seem to be treated super effectively or they've had for many, many years and just live with. Is this something that could help with, I suppose, conditions that almost just become more chronic because of this resistance?
Because the chronic conditions, they also have the biofilm colonies. And our drug was originally an anti-biofilm agent. So it, like a biofilm is kind of the slime that covers bacteria that's part of that colony. And bacteria in a biofilm, they can be a thousandfold more resistant to treatment. Whereas our drug was actually discovered because it's so successful at collapsing these colonies. What we then discovered was that when you collapse these colonies, suddenly these bacteria were not resistant anymore on their own accord as free-floating bacteria. And that made us discover a mechanism which we call a metabolic switch that switches the bacteria from resistant to non-resistant. So there are multiple things at play here. One hand, it's the disruption of the colony formation, but when you have free-floating, multi-drug resistant bacteria, you can stop them from being able to deploy those weapons of resistance.
And I know you've completed a phase one clinical trial and you're looking to move to a phase two trial. Can you just explain a little bit, I suppose, I don't know if I'm using the exact right terminology, but I suppose what's been trialed or tested so far and then what you're looking to do in the future?
Yeah. So the phase one clinical trial was for an inhaled formulation. So where you have a nebulizer and you breathe in the drug into the lungs. And that was to target these chronic respiratory infections that cystic fibrosis patients can have or bronchiectasis patients. And they are often like many years, they have reduced lung capacity because of the infections. And when these infections really become, more urgent, they can often cause death. So that was our first target. However, when we had when we did that trial, it showed that it was very very safe to use in lungs, and the lung is one of the most sensitive organs. So what we were asked is, can we please go to an oral form, so like a tablet, or an intravenous? And because then you can help more people, and also even patients with lung infection would benefit because they would still get the drug through a tablet rather than needing to sit and inhale it. So that's why we're now actually changing. So we're taking a small step back, going to a phase one and do an intravenous trial. And then very rapidly after that, complete it with a phase two trial, and most likely in serious bacterial infections.
Why does antimicrobial resistance, you know, pose a challenge to health practitioners or for people trying to sort of, you know, treat, you know, people who are sick or injured or in hospital for something around the world? What's the urgency for this?
Yeah, we expect about 39 million people to die by 2050. And that's a lot of jumbo jets. It's like, you know, it's nearly unimaginable what that will mean. If we compare that to what happened at COVID, this is COVID to the nth degree. Because the issue with bacteria is that they, you know, they're different from viruses. So viruses, you get the resist, like the new virus that mutate. So it's virtually, we call that vertical gene transfer. So they give it from one to the next offspring. And whereas bacteria, and their resistance mechanisms, they can actually share around, so they can duplicate. They don't need to die, and or they don't need to have the next generation to come to become resistant. They have both mechanisms. So this is why it's so scary, because these resistance mechanisms, they can remain lying around in the environment, you know, potentially being picked up again. So when bacteria meet other bacteria, they can say, hey, I've got these cool technologies here, you take it, and if these pesky antibiotics come in, then you're protected. So you see the multiples of resistance, and the harder you treat, the more resistant they become. And this is why we always feel like, one hand, we need antibiotics, but on the other hand, we're scared of using them too. And that that cord between a rock and a hard place tells you immediately there's something else we need to understand. And that's exactly what our technology is focused on.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
And I understand that you have sort of a bit of a personal motivation to do with your own child being quite unwell for a long time. Can you just tell me a little bit about your sort of your personal motivation behind this research as well?
Yeah. So my son, he was about 12 when he started to faint. And then very rapidly he slept and he couldn't wake up anymore. So he virtually was 100% in bed. We had to bring him to, like, carry him to the bathroom, and for 2 years, and then it took a total of 6 years to come back from it. And he had multiple different infections, like bacterial infections that came from an original Lyme disease, like he had a tick bite when we were in Europe. And so because it wasn't treated when he was younger, it had become chronic and it was pretty nasty. And it was very difficult to get to the bacteria. Whereas my husband and I were both drug developers, and my husband is even a microbiologist. And we had never kind of focused on what to do when the antibiotics don't work. And then we looked around, like, you know, apart from our frustrating position where we couldn't help our son, we're looking around and you see you know, elderly women with urinary tract infections. You see, you know, children with glue ear. It's every time the same thing. And there must be something that is so common to that across all bacteria that we need to be able to get to. And because we couldn't help Jonathan for a long time, and we did a lot of research, and when UWA had an interesting research or a data point that they brought to us, and we thought that was actually key. And based on that, we raised capital and then grown Lixa out of it and put a lot of research in it. And what's actually interesting is that everything in our ecosystem around antimicrobial resistance is targeted at funding new antibiotics. But we already know that when you come with a stronger antibiotic, you create more resistance. So we actually should be funding things that break resistance. And so for us, like, we have this potential solution to this massive crisis, but we don't get the funding that antibiotics get. And it's a real interesting situation. But that's, you know, in the end, that's when you have a seemingly intractable problem. And you have to know that if you've got a solution, you need to be the champion for it. And you've got to expect some people pushing back to it. But now with the GARP announcement, suddenly we get a lot of support from a lot of groups because now it's considered scientifically proven. But it's a very interesting journey. But we've been at it for a long time, and we're not going to give up on it. We think it's key for humanity that we solve this. And we believe that if you solve a big problem, it's also big business. You know, it doesn't make sense to me that people say you can't make money out of an antibiotic. It's not about making the money necessarily, but it's about making sure that we can deliver the solutions and that we can actually help people. And for that, we need the funds. And so I think we're onto something, and that we're really have kicking some big goals. And it's quite interesting to do that from little Perth, whereas the rest of the world is still stuck in developing antibiotics.
And can I ask, how's Jonathan doing now?
Yeah, he's 22. He started recently a job just stacking shelves, and it's the first time he got out of the house again. So this has been going on, I think, for the last 3-4 months. But from the age of 12 until 22, that's how long it took for him to recover. That he didn't have any schooling, no high school, because he was asleep. And so that's the impact. And that's not even, you know, when we count the impact of AMR, we count the people who die, but we don't count the people who are debilitated, who can't take part in a normal life. The children who can't go to school or can't go and see their friends. But he's much better now. He's very tall, muscular, and I think he's got, you know, he doesn't want to look back on his illness. He just wants to go ahead and create his life now.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.